whether we're talking about how children behave with their parents when they come home and they'll like totally unleash on their parents, but they never act that way out in public. We would be civil to somebody that we encounter in a business setting, but if our spouse did the same thing, we're like, what the heck are you doing?
I think sometimes when we, in marriage, and even with our adult children, we don't set expectations and it creates conflict.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. I'm Denise.
And I'm Kirsten. And we hope you will join us as we explore the ins and outs of building healthy relationships with our adult children.
Together, we'll speak with experts, share heartfelt stories, and get timely advice addressing topics that matter most to you.
Get ready to dive deep and learn to build and nurture deep connections with our adult children. And of course, when to bite our tongues.
So let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. I'm Denise, and I'm here with my co-host, Kirsten. And we're so honored you're with us. Truly, we thank you so much for listening. You know, after our amazing last episode with Charles Fay of Love and Logic, we thought we'd take a bit of a breather. Today, we're not talking completely about our adult children. We're talking about us and our relationships with our spouses, significant others, our partners, and I'm going to push them on talking about relationships with our adult kids. We did a podcast about this in season one, about bringing the spark back in the marriage. My sister, Connie Fisher, who's our audio engineer, she co-hosted it with me, and it was great. We interviewed Tony and Alyssa DiLorenzo, and we asked them to come back today to talk to us, because we started thinking when we become empty nesters, we lose our role of parenting, we might lose our professional role, and what's left but our relationships and those around you. And all we can do is make them stronger. In their new book, the one quote I took away, well, a few of them, and I have some others I'm going to share later, but one was, repeat what you don't repair. And it's so true. If we're doing things wrong within a relationship or things that are harming the relationship, we continue to repeat it unless we work on repairing it. We're always pushing things like that under the carpet. Anyway, their book is called The Secret to Breaking the Conflict Cycle in Your Marriage. I want to make note that when we mention marriage, it's any relationship. That's why I'm going to make sure to ask them about our relationships and our conflicts with our adult kids.
Yeah, Denise, this is a really important topic for our listeners in general and with adult children in particular. How healthy our marriages are reflects on our kids and their future relationships. So it's important that we examine them periodically throughout and see where we can make tweaks. Everyone needs tweaks, whether it's with our marriage or any other relationship. I hear from many of my friends that when their children leave the nest, they're left staring at this person that they've chosen to spend their life with, but they may not recognize themselves and certainly not their partner. I've been really fortunate. I have found marriage to be an incredible opportunity to constantly rediscover each other with every phase and resolve conflicts as they come up. But there was that movie about the roller coaster. We're constantly on a roller coaster. And that's kind of how I've looked at marriage. There's good moments, there's bad moments, and try to learn from both of them and enjoy it every day. I think it's a gift for our kids.
Yeah, you're one of the lucky ones. It's not always like that. In fact, there was a big article in AARP that was headlined Divorce Skyrocketing Among Aging Baby Boomers. The research found people born between 46 and 64 are divorcing more than any other generation. I get it. My husband recently retired. I know yours is still working. It's hard. Your whole relationship changes. He's here all the time. And I've always worked from home. We've had to regroup, reassess. You know, the core and the foundation of our marriage is so strong, we're able to work on it. But I want to tell you, it's not easy. I really thought this would be helpful for any of us.
I agree with you entirely. We also both work from home. There's just days where I'm like, please go to lunch. I'll go work out, anything. Just we need that break. But I do think we're fortunate to be able to have the opportunity to work on it. I think it's really important for our kids to see that we are working on it more than anything else that we do for our kids. I think that relationship that we teach them by just how we are with each other is pretty important to their future with their own spouses.
You're right. I'll tell a quick funny story and then we're going to introduce Tony and Alyssa. My husband's a real perfectionist and I have been the homemaker for over 30 years. He worked really long hours. I'm cooking and he'll come in the kitchen and center my pot over the burner or tell me I'm not using the right tool to mash the potatoes or why don't I do this? And I'm just looking at him. I've been doing this for 35 years. Stop. And he looked at me and he said, I know, it's just hard for me to see how the sausage is made.
That is awesome. I love that story.
Yeah, and so he was able to bring some humor to it. And since he said that, it has really calmed me down.
It's awesome. I love it. That's a great story.
Let's get started. Okay, welcome, Tony and Alyssa DiLorenzo. We're so happy to have you back. After 11 years of marriage, you reached a breaking point. And despite everything, you felt like there were only a few options. Get divorced and co-parent, wait until the children turn 18 and get a divorce, or get radical about strengthening your marriage. Well, since you're here together, I'm assuming you chose number three.
Yeah.
Good assumption.
And they're the host of the wildly popular podcast, One Extraordinary Marriage, co-author of two Amazon best-selling books, and we'll tell you about those later and also link them in our episode notes. And they coach couples all over the world. Their website, oneextraordinarymarriage.com, has a huge amount of resources and information. So visit it after today's episode. We're so happy to have you back to Bite Your Tongue. Many listeners might have not have heard the earlier episode. So why don't you just quickly tell us how you became so passionate about everyone having an extraordinary marriage?
Well, a lot of times your passion comes out of your dysfunction. And that is very much the case with us. You mentioned at year 11, we were not in a good spot. The irony of hearing you run through all the options that we had then was that the baby that we were waiting to grow up just turned 18 and is about to graduate from high school. So it's not lost on us this year. Very specifically, she just posted her decision on social media. So it's official now.
Oh, for college.
But we could be facing divorce right now. Mm-hmm. If we hadn't chosen to get radical all those years ago.
Most of our listeners are parents of adult children. We're in the gray zone. I just saw an article in AARP magazine that said, divorce is skyrocketing among baby boomers. Why do you think this is happening?
I think there are a number of reasons. I think first and foremost, we spend a lot of time focused on our children. So when they grow up and move out, you're looking across the kitchen table at somebody going, who are you? Right? There's been all of this focus on career and kids, and we've lost who we were as a couple, and it can feel really daunting to get curious again and go, oh, okay, like, what's it going to look like to date one another? What's it going to look like to have conversations again? That really moves you into a place. And I also don't think we're encouraged so much to stay married.
I think that's really true.
Can you explain a little bit actually more about that?
Yeah, I think our society makes it easy to get divorced. And so there isn't this like, hey, hang in there. There's a mantra that goes around right now that says, if you're not happy, you're probably with the wrong person. If you're not happy, you need to go find the person that's going to make you happy. Instead of saying, if you're not happy, hey, let's take a look at the person in the mirror and start there before we start just switching partners to see who's going to make us happy. We have to be happy internally.
Right.
You had a quote, you repeat what you don't repair. That and this whole happiness thing, we've talked in a lot of episodes about this whole happiness generation. Young adults particularly have this thing, if I'm not happy, I'm moving on. And maybe it's now come over to us. It's like social media, television, everyone's having hot sex. Everyone looks good. Everyone has a beautiful house if you're on TikTok or Instagram. You're never going to have that if you stay with this dud who you loved years ago.
I think you're hitting it spot on. And I think we've lost in society as a whole staying committed. What does it mean to go through the good times and the tough times, for richer or for poorer, for sickness and in health? We've become, even in our consumerism, think about, we're all old enough at this point in time. Think about when we were children. We had toys that lasted. Mm. Like, my mom still has some of those toys in her garage. I don't know why, but she does. We had stuff. We kept it. We were committed to it. It doesn't work anymore. Go get something new on Amazon. Oh, that didn't fit anymore. Oh, I got this. Like, we even get into that. And I think that can permeate our minds as well as it just in our relationships with our spouse, with our friends, with our loved ones, with anybody. It's just sort of like, you serve no purpose anymore. I'll go find something else.
I just wonder, I always think everyone thinks the grass is greener on the other side. And in your counseling, do you find that maybe when they don't work hard enough and are gone, they're back 6 months later or a year saying, what the heck, why didn't I work on what I had first?
I actually don't have that many people that will rebound. I think a lot of people believe that if they say this isn't working and I want a divorce, that it's not okay because of all the hurt and the grief to come back and say, I made a mistake and I was wrong. The sheer amount of courage and vulnerability that it takes to come back to a spouse that you know you've hurt. Because if you're the one that asked for the divorce and you're like, this isn't working, and you've separated your lives, It's like climbing the Grand Canyon to come back and say,
I like that, crying in the Grand Canyon. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. I mean, like you can't, I mean, it's so vast. It's so overwhelming. I mean, there are people that do it, but it's very rare because I think people by and large go, I can't go back to that.
Interesting.
Because there was so much damage done.
All right. We want to talk about the book, but in our earlier episode, we talked about the six pillars that you had for years and you still have. And I know the new book has the six pillars for conflict. I want to, at least for those that haven't listened to the first episode, go quickly over the original six pillars, because I think those are important.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll just go over them real quick. So you have emotional intimacy, verbal, nonverbal communication. Physical intimacy, this is your non-sexual touch. This is hugs, kisses, those sort of things. Then we go into our financial intimacy, talking about money, our spiritual intimacy. What does that look like? We may be spiritually intimate. We may go to the same congregation. We may not. What is our spiritual intimacy? We have our recreational intimacy. That's our fun. These are the activities, the things we do together. Think of it as your date time. And then we have our final pillar, which is our sexual intimacy. And that is romancing, initiating, foreplay, and sexual intercourse.
Do you think of those pillars, there's one that most couples have the most struggle with as they get older?
The two. There's two.
I would say for most couples, it's the two on the end. Yeah. It's the emotional intimacy and the sexual intimacy.
Not financial.
Financial was probably number three, especially as people age, depending on how they've set themselves up, what their plans are for the future, retirement, long-term care, that type of thing. But when it comes to the emotional and the sexual, when you've been married a long time, you can easily stop having conversations. Again, if all the conversations have been about the kids and the kids go away, you're like, what the heck do we talk about? I also think that there is a kind of an unspoken belief that old people don't have sex. So people think that their sex life is supposed to diminish, that we're not supposed to have great sex after, for some couples, it's even after the honeymoon. But people believe that. And they just accept it instead of going, wait, how can we keep this thing going? We have a couple that we know in the one family. They just celebrated their 39th anniversary. They're both 60. And they did 120 days.
60, yeah. 60? Kirsten doesn't know about this. You'll flip, Kirsten, when you hear this one. Tell her about this. Tell the listeners about this.
So the initial catalyst for all of our transformation all those years ago was Tony coming to me one night. We were in bed and he said, I think we should do a sex challenge. We had just watched a few couples on a morning show, a recording that was talking about the sex challenges that they'd done. Tony suggested it. We weren't having sex at the time. That's the irony. Like he's suggesting something that wasn't happening in our marriage. And I immediately say no. I'm like, forget it. We're not doing it. I'm like, that's just crazy. Our kids are 2 and 5. That's not the solution to our problems. And the next day, I have my come to Jesus moment with a basket full of laundry in my garage. And I realize that if I can't put my marriage first, my marriage is over. And so what we had done and what we shared in the very first episode of our podcast is we did a 60-day sex challenge. We ended up completing 40 out of 60. Now, our audience has taken that and they've done it.
They've run with it. They've run with
it. They're incredible.
Yeah.
They're incredible.
Does sex always have to be intercourse? No.
Well, that's where, like what I said, we broaden that in the six pillars of intimacy to help couples understand it doesn't always have to be intercourse. It is the romantic, it's the initiating, it's the foreplay too. Like those are important concept or components of our sexual intimacy. And so we know a lot of couples who will do challenges where the foreplay part, the touching of one another, oral sex is like for them is like great. And they're like, we did 60 days of sex, but many of those days were we did do just oral sex with one another, and it was fantastic.
So there's no question about it. Physical intimacy creates bond when you love someone. I don't know what it's like when you don't love someone, but when you love someone, it creates a bond. All right, let's get to conflict here. Why'd you write this book on conflict, and what patterns were you seeing in your clients that you thought we need to do this?
So the reason the book came about was because virtually every coaching session I've had for the last 10 years, people don't come to a marriage coach because they don't have conflict. And so everything I've done for 10 years has dealt with conflict in some way, shape, or form. What we started to realize was not everybody would take the step to go to a marriage coach because it's also vulnerable. It's exposed. You're talking about these intimate things. And so knowing that conflict was so great a part of all these marriages, we wanted to put together a resource that somebody could pick up and go, let me start working on this myself. Let me develop a little bit of muscle so that when I go and talk to someone, if we get to that stage, if we need to work with a professional, I've got some background knowledge. Mm-hmm. I've got tools that are at my disposal in the book to be able to start working on conflict myself.
One of the things that I've been hearing recently more often is that marriage seems to work better for men. I've heard it from both men and women. Have you had experience with that, where the basis for that is?
I've read a little bit about that. I think it has to do a lot with the fact that if you look at the statistics, if you look at the division of labor, especially when there are children in the home, and I'm talking like under adult age children, so high school and younger, a lot of the household responsibilities fall to wife and mom. And so you see a lot more burnout. You see a lot more wives will often say and tell me, like in the Bold Wives Club or another community we have, I feel like I've lost myself. Men very much, there is still, I think, in a lot of marriages where he goes to work, she's also going to work, but she's coming home and she's doing laundry and she's putting dinner on the table and taking care of all those types of things. And so it can, from appearances and division of labor, it can look like it is easier for men or more beneficial for men than it is for women.
So I get to some of the steps in the conflict book, the pillars of conflict. And I might want to do a little bit of role playing here because I do think, again, this relates to our adult children. But I also want to read one more quote that I really love from the book. What comes easy won't last long, and what lasts long won't come easy. Didn't you put quotes at the beginning of each chapter or something with
we
a little?
That
okay,
well.
That's one of the quotes from one of the chapters. We all know it's hard. And you talk about the conflict dance, and we all dance the conflict dance. And one of the little examples you give, and the minute I read this, I thought of my adult children. You could hear a parent or a husband or a roommate. Why are you always on the phone? I can't talk to you when you're on the phone. And the more appropriate way to say that, I was hoping we'd have a few minutes to connect. Today was a crazy day and I really wanted to talk to you. I know you've probably had a full day too. So instead of attacking them, you're always on the phone. I never get to talk to you. The response when the person says it the first way, person two says, well, I'm just taking a few minutes for myself. What's the big deal? You get on your phone too. I could just hear my husband saying that to me because I am a little bit addicted. I'm always on my phone. And if I said it in a nice way, the response might be, it was a busy day and I wanted to check out and veg for a bit. Can I get back to you in a few minutes? So again, you're acknowledging what they said. You're acknowledging they need time for you, but you're doing it a kind way. So what I took away from a lot of this role playing in steps was kindness. Treat the people around you like you treat someone out on the street. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely. Whether we're talking about how children behave with their parents when they come home and they'll like totally unleash on their parents, but they'd never act that way out in public. For us as the adults, where you're right, we would be civil to somebody that we encounter in a business setting. But if our spouse did the same thing, we're like, what the heck are you doing?
I think sometimes when we, in marriage, and even with our adult children, we don't set expectations and it creates conflict. And so with the phone instance, Denise, if I come in and I see Elisa on her phone, it can frustrate me. And it does. The question to ask is, hey, Elise, how long are you going to be on your phone? Or what can we both do our thing to decompress, chill? When can we get together? Because I think for a lot of us, we have unmet expectations of, I need to talk to you. I want to talk to you. I want to engage with you. I just don't know how long it's going to be. Are you going to be there for 5 minutes or 5 hours? And so when we can set up some expectations, we can de-escalate a conflict pretty quickly. It's just hard for us. We don't know how to do that because our spouse can sometimes get defensive, and that's where the conflict cycle starts to rear its ugly head, because all of a sudden it's like, oh boy, here we go. Like, we went from the conflict and now it's escalating to, oh shoot, now I got to really deal with this. And do I really even want to deal with this?
But just see, in listening to some of this and going back to the intimacy and the sexual and the whole list there, it's really about being very present. Because in those moments, the example you just gave about the phone, you're not present if you're on the phone looking. And it's almost that, how do you pull them back so that you can have whatever the conversation is and reconnect at the end of every day?
I love that word, Kirsten. It is. Are we present with one another in any of our intimacy, any of the pillars of intimacy? Are we present? We live in a society that pulls us away.
Right.
At times from one another. And it's easier to just disengage than to engage with one another.
Has conflict increased as we're in this society that's so overwhelming with social media and phones and technology? And has there been more reason for conflict and inability to be present?
I don't have any hard and fast statistics on it, but I do believe if we've watched our world in the last 4 or 5 years, very specifically since 2020, I would definitely say not only has there been an uptick in conflict, but it's actually become more acceptable to just unleash on people. I get to say whatever I want to say, and you just have to accept it, and you have to accept however I'm going to say it. And going back, Denise, to the word you used earlier, I don't have to be kind. If this is how I feel, I can just unleash on you. And kindness is, it's why everybody's wearing those sweatshirts now that say be kind and things like that. And I think we've lost some of our civility. Not that we need to go back to a place where we aren't discussing emotions and we aren't talking about how things impact us. But I think there's a skill that's been lost or disregarded that says, I still need to be civil to you. I can share my emotions civilly so that you know where I'm coming from, but then we can work together to find a solution instead of just exploding on people.
It's interesting because at the beginning of the podcast, I gave you the quote on the graying divorce. There's also a statistic that says 25% of young adults are estranged from their parents. And that goes to the kindness thing. That goes to the me generation, to the I'm not happy, so what's not making me happy? Rather than working on the conflict and relationship with your mom or your dad or your aunt or your brother, I'm just going to separate from them because it's not working for me. All right, we really need to get to these conflict steps. Let's get to these steps. So the first step in the first chapter was list topics that cause conflict. So what are some of those?
If we're talking about marriage, and we literally just had this in our own marriage last weekend, we're not making enough time for each other. Right? We're in that spot where you're too busy or you're too distracted. We all talked about the phones, finances, and as we've been talking about a little bit here, children. It doesn't matter if they're young children. It doesn't matter if they're adult children. Children still cause conflict regardless of their age, whether it's conflict with them or conflict between the two of you about them.
So on their website that you can download this workbook and do it, is this for you to share with your spouse? Like, I filled it out on myself. I haven't shared it with my husband, although we talk about this stuff all the time. Would you then come together and share the kinds of things that you both believe create conflict in your marriage or relationship?
Absolutely. Because my guess is if you sat down with your spouse and you shared your list and they shared their list, that there might be some things that actually surprise you that you don't know are annoyances, irritations, frustrations. And those are the kinds of things that lead to those underlying resentments that then turn into big explosions or not talking to each other and that type of thing.
The second one, and I probably don't have time to go through all of them, but I'm going to go through the ones that really stuck out for me. I loved this one, know thyself. Because as you said earlier, it's always someone else's fault.
Sure. It's much easier to deal with, like, not have to deal with stuff if it's your problem.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about that part.
Well, it's so important to look at our own like what we learned about conflict growing up in terms of role models, that type of thing. I talk a lot about it. The adults that were in your life, what did they fight about? How did they handle conflict? What were the behaviors that they did? If you always saw, case in point, my mom avoids conflict like the plague. And so what I would see is when she and my dad got into conflict, she would shut down and completely remove herself from the situation. Fast forward, I'm no longer a child. I am now a married woman. Tony and I get into conflict. Guess who shuts down and removes herself from the situation?
And I come from a family, a larger Italian family, where screaming and yelling at each other is just normal, right? I mean, you'd sit at the kitchen table and everybody is just screaming at each other. And even so, even if they do scream at one another, they're interacting with one another. And at the end of the night, I don't care if it was just a weekend spaghetti get together or Christmas Day, they would all still get up and they'd all give each other a hug and a kiss. And you'd still say, I love you.
Like Tony, I'm Greek. Same kind of thing. And my husband's in our early dating years, I would say, you cannot just leave. But you cannot just leave. And everyone always just says to me, lower your voice. And I'm just having a conversation.
So you have those two dynamics and you need to know thyself. You need to know your upbringing. How we didn't know that when we were younger. So all I saw was Elisa just checking out. And to me, that was just disengaging from the relationship, from the marriage, from us being able to work through stuff. So we had to understand that, hey, our upbringings have really brought this into our marriage. Mm-hmm. And we can still be like that. We can still have that, but there's an understanding of, okay, this is what I saw growing up. That's what you saw growing up. Okay, how are we now going to come together and engage when there is conflict in the marriage or outside of the marriage that's being brought into the marriage, whatever that conflict may be. But it took us some years to really understand that. And once we did, we were like, okay, we're still on the same page. It's just how we act and react to conflict is different.
I find even when you are working on those things, you fall back. There's no perfection in any of this. You always fall back and catch each other and just identify it. But anyway, one thing, what did you mean by, if you minimize your weakness in conflict, you can maximize your strengths and forge a stronger bond between you? I didn't get that.
When you look at the areas where maybe you don't think you would identify it as a weakness, when you start looking at those and identify, and the reality is the only person we can change in conflict is the one that we're, you know, attached to, the mirror, the person in the mirror, you. And so becoming aware of weaknesses, addressing them, doing the work on them, means that we can then maximize into a place of strength. And that shifts the whole conflict dynamic. If I know that I have a tendency to shut down, I've multiple times over the course of our marriage have been on a journey where I'm like, you know what, this year, you're going to hang in there, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to make eye contact. You're not shutting down. You're going to continue in the conversation. And this was something I very actively did in 2023, to the point where if we got in conflict, I'm just like staring at Tony, like, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm hanging in here, right? And it was weird, exactly. But it was something I had to do in order to really strengthen our relationship and shift what was happening in conflict and actually develop a strength there. Where I was weak, I made it a strength of saying, hey, change your behavior. Do something different and see what we've seen over, very specifically over the last year, is those conversations take on a different flavor because I chose to go after my weaknesses and not let them stay as weaknesses, but start to turn them into places where I have strength.
You know how when you've been married for a long time, you really learn what someone's triggers are?
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure.
Right? And you can play on them really well. And the idea, mm-hmm. obviously, is that eventually you stop. You know what they are, so you don't do that. But why do we do that? I still do that. I've been married for 33 years. Still in a moment of weakness, and when I'm frustrated, when I'm for some reason I'm not able to communicate, it's that not being able to step backwards, and it's mm-hmm. easier to throw out one of those triggers than it is mm-hmm. to deal with whatever's right there.
We've been married 27 years. You mentioned 33 years. So we get into this place where we have to discipline ourselves, right? It's recognizing if there's a phrase, if there's an action, if there's an inaction that can, and take ownership and say, what am I going to do different? Denise, you mentioned this earlier. We're not perfect, but we can progress in the direction that we want to go, right? If it's like, hey, I know this phrase is the phrase that is just poke, 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 then I've got to come up with a new phrase that says, hey, I'm feeling something, right? That's on me. It's not on Tony to change his behavior or to be nicer or to do whatever. It's on me. We had a conversation this past weekend and he's like, you're not fun right now. And I was like, it's actually a valid point. I haven't been fun for a little while. And so I came home from this conference that we were at and I sat down. And I'm like, what do I want to do that's fun so that I'm not just poking him or I'm not being an irritant, but I'm doing something different to really step into that place where we're not in a triggered state all the time, but we're bringing the fun back. We're bringing the romance back. We're bringing the connection back because there's nothing that says those things have to die because you've been married 30 years. Mm-hmm. That's just laziness on our part.
Words have power. Mm-hmm. We have to remember this. And it's something Elisa and I have talked about a lot on our podcast. And we have the ability to have self-control. There are words, there are statements, there are things that I can say that I know can turn Elisa on a dime. I've had to take my words captive, even in moments when she is frustrating me, even in moments when she is shut down, even in moments when she's irritating me, I have had to go, hold on, what's the name of the podcast here? Bite your tongue.
Right.
I've had to bite my tongue and go, hold on. If I say that, what's going to happen? Am I willing to deal with that? Or am I going to bite my tongue and reword what I'm feeling, the emotions, so that way Elisa and I can engage with one another instead of creating a chasm between one another. And so I do believe our words have so much power, and it's something I had to work on because I was the one who would just spew out stuff. Like, because I wanted to get reactions from Elisa. I mean, I grew up in Italian. Let's get the reaction. Like, she won't move. She's like stoic over here. What am I going to say? And I had to realize that that's hurting her. It's detrimental to her. It's detrimental to our marriage, and it's detrimental to me. So I have to make the choice to go, I'm not going to say that. And it's changed our marriage. It can change on the other side too, because our words have power for the positive. Many years ago, I began to call Elisa my beautiful wife, Elisa, when at a point in time when she didn't feel beautiful. She didn't see herself as beautiful inside and out. I just kept speaking that word over her. This is my beautiful wife, Elisa. We've said it on the show every time I say it. When I introduce her to people, hey, I'm Tony, this is my beautiful wife, Elisa.
I love that.
Well, I love how she's smiling. I mean,
look at how
you're describing it.
And so that's what I think of when I hear that. We have the ability to have self-control. Are we willing to do it? Are we willing to harness that and then use the power of our words to uplift, encourage, bring hope to our marriage? I'm not saying it always works. Yeah. We're not perfect. But that's where I'm at probably like 80% of the time. When ill words are said, it's having to say, I'm sorry for the words that I spoke.
Right.
That wasn't appropriate of me.
I love that words have power. The problem is, we don't bite our tongues enough with those we love the most. We mm-hmm. bite our tongues with everybody else, but mm-hmm. our kids, our spouses, our parents, we mm-hmm. seem to feel like we can just say what's on our mind. And because we feel unconditional love in so many ways, in some mm-hmm. ways, we just do it. And that right. doesn't build a strong relationship in any situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, to that point, we count the cost of being rude or disrespectful to other people, mm-hmm. right? If you think about it in a work situation, if you're just going to spew off to your boss or a colleague, you know that there are going to be repercussions for that.
Right, right.
You know somebody's going to call you into an office, there's going to be an HR report, that, you know, blah, 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 blah. We don't see the same tangible consequence with the people that we love, with parents, children, spouse. But the consequence is still there. Just because we don't see it, just because there's not going to be a write-up, doesn't mean that it still doesn't damage the relationship. We have to remember that we have the power to either build up a relationship with our parents, children, spouse, or to destroy it through our words.
Mm-hmm. We have the power. That's right. I want to mention again that everyone listening can download Break the Conflict Cycle workbook. Just go to their website, oneextraordinarymarriage.com. It's worth taking a look at. Also, they have other books that will, after your conflict is resolved, help you bring that spark back into your marriage. check out, I love this, okay? Connect like you did when you first met. 101 proven questions for couples. I know it sounds a little corny, but listeners, it's been a long time since you had your first date. And these are questions that spark conversation when you've binged all the TV you can binge. So check out their website, because I really think there's great stuff there for all of us.
Kudos to you guys. What a beautiful gift you are giving to your children. That is generational. Your young kids, then the relationships they're going to have in the future, they're learning valuable skills, not just for their future relationships with the spouse, but for everything they're doing. I cannot think of a better gift to give to your kids.
Thank you. And that generational aspect is true. We're actually seeing, and over the last 2 years, we've had the second generation of couples getting married in the one family. So those whose parents started listening to the podcast in 2010, they're now of an age when they're getting married. And so we've got the second generation.
Yeah.
And we are seeing the transformational power. It's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. It's wonderful. Thank you, guys.
We need two good takeaways.
I got my two. I know my two.
Okay, go ahead, Tony.
For anybody listening, this is what it is. Be intentional and take action. Those are my two takeaways. You have to be intentional. If you want to resolve conflict, if you want to have an extraordinary marriage with the six pillars of intimacy, you have to be intentional about it. It doesn't just happen. You don't just wake up one day and just go, I've been lifting for 18 months. Like, I'm 50 years old. I had to be intentional. And then you got to take action. Like, I'm committed to something, and now I'm going to take that first step. First day in the gym really wasn't great. It wasn't. I felt weird, everything that comes with it. But over time, I kept getting in there. And the same with our marriage. Elisa and I, 11 years in, we're about to get divorced. We're at 27 years. The last 16 years, we've been intentional and we've taken action. And we just keep growing. Doesn't mean we're perfect. Doesn't mean we don't stumble. But we keep getting up and we keep being intentional in an area, one of the pillars of intimacy, and we take action around it.
Anything additional from you, dear?
I get my own too. Usually I hijack his, so this is super fun that he went first. I would say start with yourself and recognize that it's going to take time. Where you are today, you didn't just get there.
Right.
So if you start with yourself and say, what am I going to do? What can I do? And recognize that it's incremental change. It was incremental slide that maybe got you to where you are today, but it's going to be incremental change and effort that is going to take you to where you want to go.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank you so much. I'm just going to say one more plea to our listeners. We have a lot of women listening. Make sure your husbands listen to this episode, because it takes two to tango.
100%.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you both.
Okay. Thank you so much. Great to talk to you again. Really, really appreciate it. Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's a wrap. I don't know about you, Kirsten, but I wasn't 100% sure about doing this episode because it's not directly rated to adult kids. But I took a lot away from it. We all have to stop and think about our own relationships with our spouses, with our adult kids, with our parents. And I enjoyed it.
Well, I would agree with you. I think that what our kids see is very important, whether they're young or they're older. My kids still comment about what they see with our marriage and how did you do that? And I like to be able to have something to go back and say, well, you know what? It's not always easy. But we made the commitment that it was important, and it's important to us, and hopefully it will be important to you in your marriage later on.
Check out their website, oneextraordinarymarriage.com. They also have a podcast. Thanks so much to Connie Gorant-Fisher, our audio engineer. Remember to write to us at biteyourtonguepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your questions and ideas, and also remember to follow us on social media. I also should let everyone know, I don't think everyone listens till the end of these podcasts, but if you're still listening, go to our website and the Support Us tab. You always could buy us one virtual cup of coffee, but now you can sign up to support us for the whole year. You can give us $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever, and we'll continue to improve, get great guests, and offer you great content. So I hope you'll remember to support us. And I'm going to let you say it this time, Kirsten. Remember, sometimes
you just have to bite your tongue.